said by whom, and what was not said that you so wish had been. What happened right before the memory and after? Facing your fears. It is my experience that when people embrace this exercise, they come to identify a money memory that is fraught with sadness or anger or shame. Those emotions keep you from being strong. They have festered for years, taking hold of your head and your heart as a fear. When we live with fear, we are powerless. A money memory that continues to express itself as a fear you're carrying around today is what is between you and a secure future. And the fears we have from our childhood bleed into our adult life. The next part of the exercise is to think about your greatest money fear in your life today. What are you afraid of? Do any of these fears resonate with you? I am afraid I won't be able to support myself in retirement and will become a burden to my children. I am afraid I may be laid off, and I don't know if I can get another job at this level. I am afraid my kids don't understand that we can't afford to send them to their college of choice. I am afraid that I won't be able to take care of my parents and my children and still be able to work. I am afraid of all the things I need to do with my money, but I have no idea how to handle. I am afraid I am staying in this relationship for financial reasons. I am asking you to face your fear in order to move past it. This is the beginning of the path to becoming a strong, smart, and secure woman. When we live with fear, we are powerless. A money memory that continues to express itself as a fear today is what is between you and a secure future. The fears we have from our childhood bleed into our adult life. It is not until you break the chains that link you to your past that you can begin to create the future you deserve. To move forward requires that you connect the dots between your earliest money memory and your greatest money fear. I will tell you my story first, and I will show you how those two elements shaped my life. My earliest money memory occurred on a hot Chicago summer day when I was 12. My friends invited me to go swimming at the Thunderbird Motel. I knew I needed money to be allowed into the motel pool, so I asked my mom for some money. She told me there was no money for that. That my family didn't have the money for the pool immediately made me feel different from my friends, and not in a good way. In my young mind, I decided my family was a failure, so I must be a failure as well. I was so upset. I was convinced that I was destined to struggle my entire life, just as my parents did, and my lack of money would forever be a divide between my friends and me. I was afraid that I would never fit in because my family was poor. And that became my biggest fear. So what did I do? I snuck around the house late at night while my family slept and stole money out of my dad's pants pockets. Then I would spend the stolen money on my friends. I was dealing with my fear of not fitting in by trying to buy my way into friendships. Once I started working in high school, I continued to spend the money I earned on other people. And this behavior continued throughout college and my years of waitressing. The fear of not fitting in remained constant. When I started working as a stockbroker at age 30, my money memory slash fear was once again front and center. Fear of not belonging. Fear that everyone had money and I didn't. Fear that I would not succeed. My earliest money memory from age 12 was running my life at age 30. Do you see how my money memory was related to my greatest fear? Now see if you can find the connection between your earliest money memory and your most present money fear today. Creating a new truth. Once you have unearthed your money memory and connected it to your fear, you are ready to create a new money truth. Let me tell you how I moved past my money fear. As I mentioned, when I left my waitressing job to become a trainee at a stock brokerage, I was the proverbial fish out of water. It was the first time in my life I was not working a blue-collar job, and on top of that, I was the only female trainee in the program. Fear was my sidekick. Fear of being in a new and entirely foreign workplace. Fear of sticking out. Fear of not knowing if I could cut it. Absolute, total fear of failure. Enough was enough. I knew I had to stop this debilitating fear from making me feel so vulnerable. That's when I created a new truth to silence my fear. I decided I would talk myself out of my fear by envisioning the future self I was working so hard to create. My new truth was, I am young, powerful, and successful, and I make at least $10,000 a month. Notice I said, at least $10,000. Mind you, at the time, I was 30 years old, and I'd been earning $400 a month and living off of Taco Bell. But my new truth became my rallying cry. I repeated it multiple times each morning, and before I nodded off at night, I forced myself to write it over and over and over. Whenever fear started to roil in my head, I drowned it out with my new truth. Fear was no longer my sidekick. Success was. I know you can create the same powerful truth for yourself. Your turn. I want you to stare down your fear and write the new truth that will push your fear aside. A truth that is bursting with strength and confidence. For example, if your fear is that you will never have enough money, your new truth can be, I have more money than I will ever need. I want you to create a short declarative statement that you can memorize so that repeating it at least 25 times a day is easy. I have two rules. Your truth must be in the present tense. I have more money than I will ever need is a declaration of power. Saying, I will have, or I hope to be, or I want to be, is not allowed. If you say, one day I will have more money than I will ever need, who knows when that one day will be? Remember, too, that your statement of intent must not be self-limiting. In my truth, I said, at least $10,000. That's what I mean by not putting limits on yourself. For the next 6 months, you will write your truth 25 times a day. Say your truth out loud 25 times a day. Before you go to bed, look yourself in the mirror and silently speak your truth 25 times before you go to bed. Our words have incredible power. What you say will eventually become what you believe. And your words become your actions. Those actions then become your habits, and that shapes your destiny. That is why I am asking you to write, think, and say your new truth repeatedly. Embracing your new truth throughout each day will lead you to the destiny you deserve, a future where you are the smart, strong, and secure woman you deserve to be. Chapter 3. You are not on sale. Change, I realize, doesn't happen overnight, especially when we are talking about traits and habits that have become embedded in our character, thanks to years and years of practice. It is the work of this chapter, then, to call out some particularly damaging forms of self-sabotage, not for the purpose of making you feel bad. Remember, there is no shame or blame happening in this audiobook, but to convince you of the importance of making this attitude adjustment. The attitude I am referring to is the tendency women have to undervalue themselves. Do you think I'm generalizing? I don't think so. I've got to tell you, I see this trait and its horrible side effects in action so often, it feels like an epidemic to me. So many women, from professionals to stay-at-home moms, treat themselves, their services, and their abilities as if they were always on sale. I have always said that if you undervalue what you do, the world undervalues who you are. And when you undervalue who you are, the world undervalues what you do. My experience is that women are, unfortunately, masters at both. All the women who are now passionately making their voices heard, standing up to harassment, marching for the world they want for themselves and their communities, running for office in record numbers, are women who are declaring their days of putting themselves on sale are over. As that becomes our amazing new normal, women will also find themselves energized to bring that resolve to their relationship with money. No more discounting yourself. The big problem, as I see it, is that women treat themselves as a commodity whose price is set by others. That means women get to stand by and watch as their value is marked down or not fully valued. Tell me if any of the following scenarios sound uncomfortably familiar to you. Your boss tells you that your raise will be 3% this year, and yet you know that business is going great, your division is a leader, and you deserve a raise that is at least double what you are getting. You, however, say nothing. You cannot bring yourself to ask for a raise that respects your accomplishments and your worth to the company. You have a successful business of your own. Your clients love your work, so you get lots of referrals. But even though your operating costs have risen 10% in the past 3 years, you have yet to raise your prices. You are worried you will lose clients if you do. So instead of charging more, you take on a heavier workload to generate more revenue. You work yourself to the bone because you can't seem to value what you do, even though everyone tells you that you do it incredibly well. You are a stay-at-home mom. Your spouse works hard and brings home a decent paycheck. You're in charge of keeping the kitchen stocked and the house running. But when those expenses exceed what your spouse makes, it somehow becomes your fault. The problem is that as a family, you have expenses that exceed your income, but you allow yourself to become the sole party responsible for the problem. Even worse is the common division of labor I see in far too many marriages. The wife handles the day-to-day bill paying, and the husband makes all the long-term planning decisions. It is scary how many smart, capable women take no role in understanding and driving their long-term financial security. They have no clue how much is being saved for retirement, how it is being invested, whether there is ample life insurance, and if they possess the key estate planning documents to protect themselves and their children. You are a massage therapist, a manicurist, a hair cutter. You are doing well and making good money. Yet every time a friend or business associate suggests a barter deal in which you swap services for free, you agree to it. You don't really want to barter. In fact, you don't particularly want the services you will receive in the trade, but still, you say yes because you are afraid of offending the other person. Bartering doesn't pay the rent or pay down your credit card bill, but for some reason, you just can't say no. You have a full-time job and a full-time family that needs your attention. But when the PTA asks you to help organize the school auction, you sign on. They know they can count on you. Every time you are asked to volunteer, you oblige. Volunteering is just what women do, right? It comes with the territory. Did you find yourself in there somewhere? Do you get it? You treat yourself like you're on sale. You're so reluctant to put a real value on what you do that it diminishes who you are. And as I said, that creates a vicious cycle. When you devalue what you do, it becomes inevitable that you and those around you devalue who you are. When I ask women who run their own businesses why they refuse to raise their prices, they tell me they are afraid to make their needs a priority. When I wonder why a woman who's been a loyal, productive employee doesn't push her boss for a meaningful raise, it becomes clear to me that she's intent on being the good soldier at work. One difference between when this book was first published in 2007 and today is that we are beginning to see women increasingly holding their bosses accountable for gender pay inequities. The conversation is occurring more and more. True change for all women will come only if we individually and collectively make it clear we will not let our employers put us and keep us on sale. When I see a stay-at-home mom acting as if her husband's paycheck is his and not theirs, I see a woman who does not appreciate the very valuable job of running a household and raising a family. You need to take yourself off the sale rack. Once you learn to respect your right to be fully valued, you will find it easy and natural to ask the world around you to respect that value. You set your price, and the world will meet it. When you walk through the world feeling you are more than rather than less than, more will come to you. No one ever achieved financial security by being weak and scared. Confidence is contagious. It will bring more into your life. It's also important to recognize that your time has value. What I see far too often is that women say yes to giving without calculating the cost of that decision. If you had to put a price on your time, you'd have to take into account the emotional toll and the financial toll of what you are giving away. The financial price is obvious. Are you being compensated fairly for your time? The emotional price is what it takes out of you when you say yes. Too often, both of these measures are overlooked when you are called upon to volunteer, which leads us to the volunteer syndrome. It never fails that when I participate in a women's conference or meeting, there is one speaker who makes the point that volunteering is terrifically important for women. It is always the same message. We owe it to society to give back, and we owe it to our children to set a good example of giving back. The audience always nods eagerly in agreement. Now, here is what I find fascinating. I have never once, and I mean not once, heard a male speaker make that point. Men talk about power and success and how money can create more power. Men are comfortable with that. Women are so uncomfortable with the topic of becoming powerful and successful that they have to wrap any discussion of it in the comforting blanket of volunteerism. What is that about? This is not a comment on men. It is simply an observation of what men are told versus what women are told. Again, this is why we have to blast open our past and let it go. Do men volunteer? Of course, but not in the same way. Men sit on boards. Men coach Little League. Women, on the other hand, bake pies, organize the school auction, chaperone field trips. Generally speaking, women tend to take on the more labor and time-intensive behind-the-scenes tasks. Also, the fact is that more women volunteer than men. According to a government survey, 28% of women volunteer compared to 22% of men. If it's not encoded in our DNA, then it is certainly the result of the traditional roles of days gone by. Men went off to work. Women tended to the home front and created community. Men donated money. Women didn't have money of their own to give away, so they gave time. Look at your own life and tell me if this still holds true. My guess is it probably does not, which means that an adjustment of expectations collectively is in order. Now, I want to be very clear here. I am not suggesting that every minute of every day you must be on the clock, or that you should never volunteer your time. That is so not my message, I cannot even tell you. Being powerful is not about being selfish, but it does require that you examine your behavior and see where you may be out of balance. And when you do make the decision to donate your time and your effort, know the true worth of what you are giving. The bartering trap. Can you tell me why it is that so many self-employed women find it hard to charge for their services? The minute a friend, business associate, or even a total stranger suggests they swap services, the woman agrees. Again, this is not in itself a bad thing to do, but only if you can afford to barter. If you need cash to pay the rent or fund your Roth IRA, then why are you agreeing to swap 2 hours of your consulting services for 1 hour of someone else's public relations expertise? Money is not dirty. Wanting and needing money is not wrong. When you have a healthy relationship with money, you understand its value and importance in building the secure life you seek for yourself and your family. Do not put your time and services on sale or up for barter until you are sure you have the money you need to take care of yourself. Money first, barter second. That's the right action / right relationship. Now, if you do barter, I want you to make sure that it is a fair swap. If your time is worth $100 an hour, since that is what you charge your paying clients, but your friend who wants to barter does work that is valued at $50 an hour, you are not to do an even-up one-hour swap. You have just devalued yourself again. You are bartering at a rate that is 50% below what your time is worth. If you are consciously cutting a deal with your friend because you want to help her out, then that is okay. But again, only if you can really afford to bestow that gift. If you give someone a $50 per hour break on your work, and you give them 1 hour of your time a week, that is $200 a month you are not making for yourself. If you have high-rate credit card debt, that's $200 you are giving away to someone else rather than getting out of debt. So don't then tell me you can't find the money to invest in a Roth IRA. You just gave away $200. And by the way, if you invested that $200 a month in your Roth IRA every year for the next 20 years, it would grow to more than $80,000, assuming an average 5% annual return. Eye-opening, isn't it? So please be mindful of the cost of bartering. If you can truly afford to barter, great. But don't make it a default position that you always say yes, or that you always agree to whatever terms the other party has suggested. When you undervalue what you do, the world undervalues who you are. That's the antithesis of owning the power to control your destiny. Raise your expectations. Given what I do for a living, women are quick to bare their financial lives to me. I love listening. I always try to offer advice when advice is asked for, and in return, I am constantly learning how women think and feel about money. Want to know what I see all the time? Women too scared to demand to be paid what they are worth. From stay-at-home moms to executives overseeing multi-million-dollar budgets who get measly raises, to the massage therapist or manicurist afraid to increase her rates, this condition is rampant, and it is a shameful secret women keep, too embarrassed even to tell their closest friends. Luckily, they tend to confess such things to me. Here's one story. I know a massage therapist who is so fabulous, she is very much in demand. Recently, she told me she was called by a woman who had injured her back. She told the woman that her rate was $80 an hour. The woman thought that was too pricey. "I'll pay you $60 an hour," she told my friend. Do you know what my friend, the massage therapist, did? She lowered her price to $70 an hour. The woman objected that the price was still too high, but agreed reluctantly and made an appointment. On the day of the appointment, as my friend was on her way to the woman's house, her cell phone rang. It was the woman, canceling the appointment. Now, let's look at this. One would tend to blame the woman. How rude that she broke the appointment, how cheap, and so on. But no. The massage therapist brought this on herself. I told her just that. She put herself on sale. When she marked herself down, she invited the woman to bargain with her. What if my friend had the power to say, "Listen, actually, I'm worth even more than $80, so that's my price, take it or leave it." And the woman had left it. What would have happened? She could have filled that slot with someone willing to pay her full price. She could have saved herself the useless trip out to the woman's house. Or better yet, the woman would have respected her conviction, said fine, and kept the appointment. She'd have loved how she felt afterward, and not only made more appointments, but she'd tell everyone she knew how great this massage therapist was. Listen, I get that people want a bargain. There's nothing wrong with that. But putting yourself on sale is another story. You do that to yourself. No one is doing it to you. You are not a victim of circumstance. In a case like this, you create the circumstance. You can choose to be powerful or powerless. Remember, that choice is always yours. Here's another story. A friend who works for a major corporation called to tell me she had been approached by a competitor and offered essentially the same job she was doing for her longtime employer, but at nearly double the salary. She was shocked and furious. In that instant, she realized how out of whack her salary was with industry standards, and that her employer had been taking advantage of her for years. "This is how you get rewarded for your loyalty," she complained. My advice to her? Go to the boss and let her know it was time to renegotiate their deal. But first, I told my friend, she had to let go of her anger and realize that she was complicit in this. She had permitted her employer to take advantage of her all this time. I asked her, "Did you really have no idea that you were making so much less than you should have been making?" She thought for a moment, then said, "I guess a part of me knew, but I figured we were all in this together. I couldn't imagine that this woman I respected and did good work for would not reward me to the extent she was able. I believed her when she talked about belt tightening." "And yet you knew your division was making huge profits, right?" I asked. She realized how naive she sounded. Still, she needed to take responsibility for her role in this. I said, "You go in there and say, I realize that I have allowed myself to be unfairly compensated in the past, but now I'd like to correct that and be paid in a way that matches both industry standards and my division's profitability. The lesson here is that you cannot assume that if you simply do good work, you will be correctly compensated for your effort. Maybe some of you have truly enlightened bosses who are always quick to give you raises that reflect your effort and your value to the company. But that's not typical. In fact, it's downright rare. This is one area where women can learn from men. Men like to negotiate. Men want to negotiate. Rustle some corporate feathers? Hey, a man's got to do what a man's got to do. So many women are made intensely uncomfortable by the thought of having to negotiate their salary. Research shows that women are 2.5 times more likely than men to say they feel a great deal of apprehension about negotiating. In one study, men used the metaphor of winning a ball game to describe negotiating, while women picked the metaphor of going to the dentist. A game to be won versus a painful experience. The difference in that perspective can cost women a lot. In the book Women Don't Ask, Negotiation and the Gender Divide, authors Linda Babcock and Sarah Lashever estimate that an unwillingness to negotiate the salary at your first job can end up costing you an estimated $500,000 in lifetime earnings. And it turns out that men are four times as likely to negotiate. In another book, Get Paid What You're Worth, two business academics, Robin Pinkley and Gregory Northcraft, estimate that a woman who actively negotiated her salary over the course of her career could potentially earn $1 million more than if she just settled for what her boss offered. It's pretty clear. If you don't ask and make a compelling case for a raise, you have little chance of getting what you deserve. Here is how to make sure you aren't putting yourself on sale when it comes to your salary. Be proactive. The most important step is to recognize that you need to make this happen. Getting more requires asking for more. If you are not getting what you deserve, you are not to blame your situation on someone else or some external situation. You are responsible for valuing yourself and stating that value to the world. This holds equally true for employees of companies large and small, as well as artists and stay-at-home moms. Be impatient. I do not want you sitting around waiting for your boss to magically appear and tell you the company is promoting you and giving you a raise. Take that approach, and you could well be waiting a long time. I am not recommending you ask for a raise 6 months into a job. Be realistic. But if you have gone a long time, say 2 years or more, and haven't received a raise, it's time to take action. Be prepared. Tell your boss you want to set up a meeting to discuss your compensation. Prior to that meeting, you are to give your boss a one-page outline of your achievements. Not 10 pages, one page. The idea is that you are stating in clear terms what value you have brought to the company and why now is the time for the company to show that it values your effort. The words that should never come out of your mouth are, "I deserve a raise because I haven't had one in 2 years." If I were your boss, that wouldn't do much for me. But if you state all the ways you have met and exceeded expectations, then you have my attention. The fact that you value what you do causes a nice chain reaction. It gives you the confidence to state your case, and it then makes it difficult for your boss to undervalue your work. Those of you who are self-employed, of course, have a different dynamic to deal with. You aren't asking a boss for a raise. You are asking your clients for a raise. That seems to send women off the deep end. You would rather sit in an ice bath then discuss new rates with your clients. Do not apologize for raising your rates. Do not sheepishly ask for the increase. You are to tell your clients what your new rate is. You are a businesswoman. Emphasis on the business. This is a business decision you are communicating to your clients. They don't have to pay that rate. They can indeed look for other options. But if you are good at what you do and you value your talent, they will not leave. If they do, know that you will be able to find new clients who will pay you what you know you are worth. Okay, so what if you ask for the raise and your boss looks at you with doleful eyes and says, "I wish I could do more for you, but really my hands are tied. All I can give you is a standard 3% increase this year because that's the company's policy." Your boss is appealing to your kindness, hoping you will understand that money is tight, that maybe next year will be better. Do you just walk away without gaining anything? Usually you do, right? The female need to be liked, to be seen as a team player, and your reluctance to speak up for what you deserve cause you to just take whatever your boss says as gospel. Generosity is a two-way street. If being generous, in spirit, in patience, with your boss isn't being kind to yourself, then you are not acting powerfully. So no matter how uncomfortable your boss tries to make you feel, I want you to stay right in your seat and keep the conversation going. If you know the company is on shaky financial ground, then of course you have to take that into consideration. But if the company is profitable, and you are, in fact, a contributor to that profit, then you are not to walk out empty-handed. Ask for a review and salary discussion in 6 months. Not a year, but 6 months. In the meantime, if you can't get more salary, negotiate more vacation time. You must get something of value, for you are not on sale. I have to tell you that if your boss keeps coming back to you with measly raises and new excuses, you need to move on. I know switching jobs is not necessarily easy, nor is it a quick process. But if you work for an employer who does not value what you do, you need to go work for someone who does. When you value yourself enough to reject a bad situation, you are being powerful. And that power will motivate you to find a better job. The Pursuit of Happiness, an email from my friend Deborah. Dear Susie, remember when you and I first met a few years ago? You came to address a conference being sponsored by the big Silicon Valley company where I worked. On a break, you and I got to talking. I told you that I was considering buying the condo I was renting, and the first question you asked me was whether I was happy in my job. I was so shocked at the question. What did that have to do with me buying a condo? You told me that until I found a job that made me happy, I shouldn't buy anything, because it was the down payment money I had in my savings account that would give me the freedom to make the move in pursuit of a job that I loved. The answer was so simple, yet it took you asking me about my state of happiness for me to see the light. You also inspired me to ask for more money the next time I was offered a menial raise from my boss. I had been in my job for 9 months when the performance reviews were due just before Christmas. When he called me into his office that week, we spoke for a good 20 minutes. That's a long time for him. And he expressed how as each day passed, things got better and better, and that he was very pleased to have me working for him. Then he presented me with a raise that was the equivalent of mice nuts. I had taken a $3,000 cut in my base pay to work for him, thinking once he saw my work ethic and level of dedication, he would reward it. Well, the joke was on me. After the holidays, I approached my boss and made him aware that I was glad he was happy with my performance, but I was quite disappointed in the pay increase. I decided that I wasn't going to back down from asking for more, and didn't. And after 3 months of going back and forth, he finally gave me the increase I was asking for and made it retroactive. I was so proud of myself for finally standing up for me. It's taken me forever to get to a point where I would do such a thing. My God, I'm going to be 47 in February. But I did it, and it felt really good. So thank you for being such an inspiration to me, in my life, in ways that you are completely unaware of. Yours, Deborah. Your goal is that from this day forward, you will consciously pay attention to what you need to be paid to feel powerful in your life and secure about your finances. You are to set your value, communicate that value to the outside world, and then not settle for less. Sound daunting? That's just because it takes you out of your comfort zone. You have got to stop being an obstacle on your own path to wealth and security and happiness. You must understand that valuing yourself is well within your control. Do not let others dictate your worth. You are never to put yourself on sale again. Chapter 4. The 8 Qualities of a Wealthy Woman. Now that we've gained some insight into the external forces that tend to make women feel powerless when it comes to matters of money, it is time to learn how to recondition ourselves from the inside. What's required now is that we come from a different place within our beings so that we can realize the potential we all have to become powerful and wealthy. A wealthy woman absolutely has money, but she also has harmony, balance, courage, generosity, happiness, wisdom, cleanliness, and beauty. A wealthy woman has it all, so to speak, and brings these qualities into every relationship, carries them with her in every waking moment of her life. It's my wish that you will carry these essential qualities within you wherever you go, and that they will serve as your guideposts to make sure you are always walking toward wealth rather than walking away from it. It is important you understand that all 8 qualities must be present and work together at all times in order to attain and maintain the true state of a wealthy woman. Harmony, balance, courage, generosity, happiness, wisdom, cleanliness, beauty. Qualities 1 and 2, harmony and balance. Harmony is an agreement in feeling, approach, and sympathy. It is the pleasing interaction between what you think, feel, say, and do. Balance is a state of emotional and rational stability in which you are calm and able to make sound decisions and judgments. Harmony and balance are perhaps the most important qualities of all, for they serve as the foundation for the remaining qualities. When you possess true inner harmony, what you think, say, feel, and do are one. We are so accustomed to this split-screen state of mind in which we think one thing, say another, feel something else, and act in a way that has nothing to do with what we just thought, said, or felt. When your thoughts, feelings, words, and actions are not in harmony, it shows up as an imbalance. You feel agitated, uncomfortable. You sense something is off, so you find it difficult to make rational, calm decisions. This is why these 2 qualities are a pair. To make sure these 2 qualities are present in your life, you need to pay attention to your feelings. Observe and listen to the words you use. The actions that you take should be perfect reflections of the thoughts you think. If you maintain this awareness, you will notice when you are out of harmony or balance. When you detect an imbalance, you are to stop whatever it is you are about to say or do and investigate the location of it. Take note when you feel agitated, It's a sign of impairment. If you listen to the definition of balance again, a state of emotional and rational stability in which you are calm and able to make sound decisions and judgments, you will understand that it is an essential cornerstone to a lifetime of correct and powerful behavior. Quality 3. Courage. Courage is the ability to face danger, difficulty, uncertainty, or pain without being overcome by fear or being deflected from a chosen course of action. Courage gives harmony expression. When your thoughts and feelings are one, courage helps you manifest them in the form of words and actions. When you are afraid to speak or act, courage helps you overcome your fear. Courage gives you the ability to speak your truth, even when it is not what others may want to hear. Courage is what helps you find your voice. It can be difficult for women to connect to their courage. Women can be deflected from a course of action if they think that it might hurt someone else. We've seen how corrosive it can be to remain silent, to silence ourselves, even if we've been wronged, because we're afraid of upsetting others or upending the status quo. The hashtag MeToo and hashtag Time's Up movements have shown us the toll that silence takes. And they have inspired women from all walks of life to come forward and speak their truth. It's so much easier to hurt yourself than to hurt someone else, isn't it? Women also lose their courage when they subscribe to a belief that someone or something is the key to their happiness, rather than recognizing that power lies within. If you are dependent on your husband or partner to support you, it is easy to lack the courage to speak up on behalf of yourself and your family. Think about it. Are you willing to risk the roof over your head for your needs and wishes? Fear is usually what stands between us and our courage. We're afraid to rock the boat. We're afraid of confrontation. We're afraid to upset someone. We're afraid we'll lose our job. We're afraid he will divorce us. We're afraid our kids won't love us. We're afraid of what others may think of us. We're afraid we will be flat broke. As we explored in the money memory exercise, we carry fears born from childhood experiences of loss or anxiety. Often those childhood memories have nothing to do with money per se. But when we become adults, the lingering emotional connection to that experience manifests itself as a money fear. The list goes on and on. Living with fear is not just sad. It is exhausting. I have never met anyone living with fear who is able to keep it at arm's length. When we experience fear, it seems to invade us at a cellular level that we carry with us everywhere. All the time. We can't tune it out. If we are to embrace this quality of courage to its fullest, we can no longer allow ourselves to live with fear. I hope you are already feeling emboldened by the money memory exercise that you did earlier. I want you to know that courage is a muscle that needs to be flexed throughout your life. Long after I had achieved professional success, I was reminded of this powerful truth. Susie's story. There was a time when it appeared that everything was right in my life. I had 3 New York Times bestsellers, I was on television, I had money, I had fame, and I was doing good, helping people connect to their money and improve their financial lives. I was surrounded by family and a circle of friends and colleagues I was close to. And yet, something wasn't right. Though in The Courage to Be Rich, I had written about the need for thoughts, feelings, words, and actions to be one, it took some time for me to locate the source of the imbalance in my own life. I came to see that I had a few friends and professional colleagues who truly did not have my best interests at heart. Though on the surface we appeared close, the truth was, we were not. I seemed always to be serving their needs, responding to their schedules, paying attention to what they were doing, while they showed little interest in where my life was taking me, unless it was useful to them in getting ahead in their own careers. If asked at the time, I would have said I loved them. But in truth, I sure didn't like them, not on any level. And because I had been afraid to speak these thoughts, even to myself, and act upon them, I was robbing myself of my happiness, my power, and my self-respect. One day, I decided that needed to change. I needed to muster up all of my courage to squelch my fear and to act on what I had been feeling, yet was too afraid to acknowledge for years now. I took a seriously deep breath and proceeded to do some very dramatic house cleaning. Within a few hours, literally, I ended every one of those relationships once and for all. For the first time in years, I was truly in harmony and balance. I felt proud of myself. Despite my fear, I had acted in a way that was true to myself, and the reward was the harmony and balance I was now feeling. To this day, it remains one of the best things I have ever done. I did an internal house cleaning and made space for other people to come into my life. And when the right people entered my life, it started to soar. I had relationships that were based on truth. I felt the benefits of harmony and balance internally, and I also became more powerful. I had awakened courage that had been dormant, and it started to show up all over the place. The more I used it, the more readily it was there to help me, and my life grew bigger, better, happier, and richer. Quality 4. Generosity. Generosity is when you give the right thing to the right person at the right time, and it benefits both of you. Generosity is a quality that most women can tap into very easily. Maybe too easily, if you ask me. As women, we tend to be overly generous with our time, support, love, and money. But giving simply for the sake of giving does not match the definition of true generosity as stated above. True generosity goes far beyond what you give to others. In giving, there is a power, an understanding that you are just the vessel that wealth or energy flows through. You allow money to come in through your hands and out through your heart. To be empowered to give, to be moved to give straight from the heart, is a feeling that all the money in the world could never buy. That is how I want you to feel when you have been truly generous. So let me ask you, is that how you feel when you constantly give of yourself? Do you feel enhanced? Or do you feel diminished? Be honest here. You think of yourself as a giver, as generous with your time, your talent, your compassion, your patience, your money. Others probably describe you as a generous woman. But if I were to look at you, I might think you give for the wrong reasons. Do you give because you feel that you should? Do you give to feel included? Do you give out of guilt or embarrassment? Do you give because you're worried about what others will think if you don't? It is very important that you understand that true generosity is as much about the one who gives as it is about the one who receives. If an act of generosity benefits the receiver but saps the giver, then it is not true generosity in my book. To me, honest giving must always observe these six rules. 1. You give to say thank you and out of pure love, not to get something back. A true gift has no expectations on it or demands. 2. Whether it is a gift of time, money, or love, you must feel strongly that your gift is an offering. It should be given freely and out of pure love. 3. An act of generosity must never adversely affect the giver. When you give money that you honestly can't afford to give, that gift adversely affects you. 4. An act of generosity must be made consciously. You must be aware of how your gift will affect its recipient and make sure it will not be a burden. 5. An act of generosity must happen at the right time. You must be able to afford to give your gift, whether it is a material item or the gift of time. 6. An act of generosity must come from an empathetic heart. Your generosity should be directed to those who move your heart, those you feel need your help and will treasure the help you give. Giving should enhance you, not diminish you. Quality 5. Happiness. Happiness is a state of well-being and contentment. When you find the courage to live your life in harmony and balance, when you understand and practice generosity in the truest sense, happiness spontaneously appears. When you are happy, you are open and accessible. When you are happy, you tend to be more optimistic. You approach new challenges with a clear mind that seeks positive solutions. You see possibilities rather than problems. If you are not happy, then I would ask you to try to find the place in your life where there is discord and not harmony. Have you wanted to do or say something but failed to find the courage to act? Have you been too giving or generous for the wrong reasons? When you are unhappy, you feel as if something is missing in your life, and that something becomes a hole to be filled. It is dangerous to be in a state of wanting, for it leads to decisions that are not always made with your long-term best interest in mind. Happiness is not a luxury. It is a necessity for true wealth. When you are happy, you find pure joy in your life. You are not in a state of wanting, but a state of contentment. You have the satisfaction of knowing that your actions come from a place of purity and balance, that they are correct and generous and kind. There are no regrets in this state of happiness, and that's a goal worth striving for in all areas of your life. Quality 6. Wisdom. Wisdom is the knowledge and experience needed to make sensible decisions and judgments, or the good sense shown by the decisions and judgments made from an accumulated knowledge of life that has been gained through experience. The quality of wisdom is more than intellectual, and it is in no way related to how much schooling you have. Exercising wisdom requires cutting through the noise of life and tapping into your core beliefs to make thoughtful decisions. Wisdom results from inhabiting all the qualities that came before it. A wise woman recognizes when her life is out of balance and summons the courage to act to correct it. A wise woman knows the meaning of true generosity. A wise woman knows happiness is the reward for a life lived in harmony with courage and grace. A wise woman knows how to summon her courage and do what is right rather than what is easy. Quality 7. Cleanliness. Cleanliness is a state of purity, clarity, and precision. Cleanliness is about respecting the importance of order and organization. When you don't know where your money is, when you have no filing system for your important documents, when you dive into your pocketbook to pull out crumpled bills, when your car looks like a garbage can, when your closets are filled with junk and clutter. I'm sorry, but you cannot possibly be a wealthy woman. You need to clean up your act, quite literally, to bring true wealth into your life. In India, women sweep the front entrance to their home each morning as a way of welcoming Lakshmi, the goddess of material and spiritual abundance, into their home. For there is a belief that she resides at the threshold of every house. In order for her to enter, she must have a clear path. Start with your pocketbook and wallet and make sure all bills face the same way and that every morning you put them in order. Next, donate clothing you have not used or worn in the past 12 months to a charity of your choice. Simply throw out all the beauty products that go unused. Remember, when you keep things around you that are worthless to you, they end up making you worthless. Are your important documents organized? They should be. When your accounts are clean and orderly, you can find the information you need to make good decisions. You might be listening to this and thinking that cleanliness is nice, but not essential to your financial well-being. I am here to tell you that if this quality is not up front and center, and if you do not adhere to it, there is no way you will ever own the power to control your destiny. Wealth will elude you, and you will be left with the mess that you created. Respect the power of this quality of cleanliness. Make it your way of honoring the goddess Lakshmi, if only symbolically. Tell the universe that you have cleared the path for wealth and abundance to enter. Quality 8. Beauty. Beauty is the quality or aggregate of qualities in a person that gives pleasure to the senses or pleasurably exalts the mind or spirit. Beauty is what you create when you incorporate the other 7 qualities into your life. When you take the steps to have harmony, balance, courage, generosity, happiness, wisdom, cleanliness, and beauty in your life, you will exude confidence in who you are. And there is nothing more beautiful than a confident woman. Remember, when you are confident, you feel secure. And when you feel secure, you have no fear. And when you have no fear, you have the courage to say what you think and feel in a calm and wise way. And when you are calm, you make wise decisions with your money, which then allows you to be truly generous to others as well as yourself, which in turn makes you a happy, powerful, and beautiful woman. Do you see how all of these qualities work together to help you arrive at the goal of being a woman in control of her destiny? Summoning the 8 essential qualities. I've noticed, in my own life and in others, that the more you summon these qualities, the easier they are to access. Harmony yearns for more harmony, and balance abhors imbalance. Courage begets greater courage. Once you are generous in the right way, a lesser form of generosity will feel inferior to you. True happiness will never permit you to settle for a lesser form of happiness. Carry these qualities with you throughout your life. Write them on a note card and keep them close at hand, in your wallet or in your pocket. Make it into a talisman to guide you every day as you make your way through life and all its impossible demands. These qualities will keep you focused and tranquil. Let them in, and they will offer